Happy New Year, everyone. Hope you had a good one. And hope you've got good plans for 2017. You know what you're listening to? Tonight's a really inspirational one with a guy I know called Jamie Denyer. They call him the grief preacher, and you'll get to understand why. If you don't know Jamie, you need to listen to this. He's when I went to see him, absolutely blew me away with his story. It's a very sad story, but it's a really inspirational one. So anyway, sit back, relax, grab a coffee and enjoy the show. Right, people, I've come over today to interview a guy that I met a few months ago, but I've known about him for a bit now. Really inspirational what he's doing. And you know, this show's about three elements: adversity, business, and dyslexia. So today I'm interviewing Jamie Denyer, who's got a very, very powerful story. And there's a bit in it that really, really touched me. So anyway, Jamie, thanks for being here, mate.
It's an absolute pleasure, Kirk. Thank you for having me, man.
No, it's important because I think obviously not everyone's going to see you. You've done lots of stuff, haven't you? You've done TED talks, you've done video interviews, but still there'll be people out there that don't know the story and why you're doing what you're doing. So do you want to give us a bit of background of what you're about and why you're doing what you're doing, really?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the subjects in which you cover, mate, are kind of very dear to me, especially the kind of adversity element. Adversity comes in so many different forms, and it hits us at so many different times in our life. You know, there's stuff that hits us and we think to ourselves, listen, there's not much more that can happen to us, and then all of a sudden it comes again and again and again, and we kind of think to ourselves, you know, is there any more that can come? So yeah, adversity comes in so many different forms, but as we encounter each adversity and overcome it, we ourselves grow. And it happened to me, I mean, way back when, you know, going back to when I was young, right, growing up on a council estate and stuff like that, and I had all these very negative influences around me, drug dealers and drug users, and, you know, I was witness to two murders by the time I was 13 years old, and, you know, there was a lot of violence, but I kind of made a choice to take myself out of the equation, in as much as for me to go and do something that would benefit me, which was learn a trade with my brother-in-law. Now, I couldn't just all of a sudden leave school. It was a case of me having to sacrifice my school holidays. So whenever I broke up on a Friday, I would always be working on a Monday. All my friends would be down on Brighton Beach catching a tan, and come Friday, they would be nice and brown, but I would be still the same colour. But, you know, I had money in my pocket, but it was a case of earning and still having to pay some of that, well, most of it over to my mum, because like I say, my dad left, council estate upbringing, a lot of negativity around. So I learned from a very young age that you have to pay your own way, you have to sacrifice stuff, but it gave me like an insane work ethic.
Yeah.
And it benefited me for later on in life, because I learned the trade of plastering. So I moved from my hometown of Brighton in 2001 to Essex. And things were booming up there. Things were going really well. I mean, people were throwing money around left, right and centre, and people were having, you know, double-storey extensions done. They were buying property, doing them over and selling them at a profit. You know, things were going well. But then all of a sudden adversity comes in the way of, you know, a wife at that particular time saying, look, it's over. You didn't see it coming. This was in 2007. The tail end of 2007. So when you split, your house, which was worth a quarter of £1 million, was all of a sudden worth hardly anything because the global economy crashed, and you know the value of houses went. You know, people were losing their jobs, the houses, banks were going bust, and it was financial Armageddon.
Yeah, I remember it well.
Yeah, it's it's imprinted on a lot of people's minds, mate. You know, you kind of mentioned 2008 to people, and they twitch.
Yeah, they do.
You know, so it really did affect a lot of people. But I mean, even then, even though I didn't want to go through that particular adversity, it was still teaching me stuff, because it it kind of stripped me back to kind of my bare bones, and it gave me a fresh start that even though I didn't see it coming and I didn't want the relationship to end, it was still the case. So I then, fresh slate, clean start, and, you know, I found myself on my own for a little while. The divorce was done, separation, financial Armageddon, blah, 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 financial ruin, nearly lost my house. I then met someone who restored my faith, in life, basically.
And
she said, I'm from Swansea. So it was like moving from Essex to Swansea. I knew from a very, very early time that it was a case of I needed to be in Swansea. I needed to be there with this person.
Yeah.
Of all the places. She couldn't be from the Bahamas. She couldn't be from Bermuda. She couldn't be from St. Lucia. She was from Swansea. So, but I knew I had to be there, mate. So I then started the process of selling my £250,000 house, which wasn't worth that I walked away with, by the time it sold, with £1,500 in my pocket. So so that's not enough to put down as a deposit.
It's not enough for anything, really, is it?
Not enough for anything. It doesn't get you far these days, mate. But I then had to go down the route of getting a £25,000 personal loan in the worst economical time in modern history to put down as a deposit in another country where I was self-employed, no guarantee of work, moving there for love. And this is the thing. So many people do stuff where the head rules, and if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's either absolute black or white.
Yeah.
But if you do stuff that's based on the heart, even if it's wrong, even if it turns out wrong, it's got this funny way of working itself out. If it's done with the heart, if it works out, brilliant. But if it doesn't, it's still got this funny way of working itself out in the end. So, because I was doing it from the heart, I mean, I had my financial advisor, my accountant, my family, and my friends saying to me, "Jane, you're insane. What are you on? You're self-employed, worst economical time in modern history, you're moving to another country, no guarantee of work, you know, you've got 25 grand debt around your neck to even begin with, you've got a mortgage to pay on top of that, you've got bills to pay, what are you doing?" But I then looked back to when I was 13 and a half, you know, when I was sacrificing
stuff,
when I was really putting in the effort and kind of, you know, while my friends were doing other things, I wasn't afraid to kind of go against the grain a little bit and do what needed to be done.
Yeah.
And that come back and benefited me. So that's my kind of example in action there, that even though you don't want to go through something at a particular time, you never know when it's going to benefit you further
on down the line. Similar to myself, I started when I was 13 in a butcher's shop, and my first marriage broke up at... in 1999. So yeah, I can empathise with you, and I can understand it. And I had virtually nothing the same, and I ended up with an opportunity to go to Holland. That's what I did. I took to get away, and that's where I met my wife. Not the same story, but you know, similar sort of thing. Yeah, really. Yeah. So you're in Swansea now.
Absolutely. Swansea. Yeah. Not Bermuda. Not the Bahamas. Not St. Lucia, Swansea. But again, beautiful part of the country, beautiful people. And I, coming from my hometown of Brighton, which is another seaside city, I feel very much at home in Swansea there. And in Brighton, it's very relaxed. The people are very relaxed. So to come to Swansea, where the people are very much salt of the earth, you know, very down to earth and very honest, again, I feel a lot more at home there. And you know, that's a rule in life as well. You have to feel comfortable with where you are. Even if people are telling you that it is good to you where you are, it's good to you, it may not necessarily be good for you. So, you have to make a choice of taking yourself out of a particular equation, like I did with all the negativity that was around me at my young age. To go into the workplace, to literally say to my brother-in-law, "I want to learn this trade."
Yeah, because you could now be in a different place, couldn't you? You could have gone down a different road, and now you, instead of being in Swansea, you could be in Broadmoor, couldn't you? Type of thing.
Absolutely, it is that simple.
Yeah.
It is
so that simple. People might say, "Why are you going to Swansea?" Well, yeah, actually, where I am now, it's not a bad place
compared to Broadmoor. You know. It's incredible. So, yeah, there's been these lessons that have been shown to me throughout, and stuff that I've been through, I keep pulling back and using it as a support and a resource to really pull from to get me through a particular situation. So, yeah. But as we said at the start, Kirk, that life throws adversities at you left, right and centre. And I always say that life is a storm, that you're either, wherever you are at this particular point now, this very second, you're either going towards a storm, you're in a storm, or you're coming out the other side of one.
Yeah, very good, yeah.
The difference is in time to when you come out of one and you hit your next one, or how long the storm in which you're in currently lasts. Yes, it differs, but as soon as you get out of a particular storm and, you know, everything's fine, like, I don't want to sound like the Grim Reaper, mate, but it's like you've then started the wheels in motion. You're at the start of the journey to, whether it's a week away, month, a year, 5 years away, to getting towards your next storm. You know, the adversity's always come.
Yeah, of course it does. And it's not a fairy tale, is it? You know what I mean? It's not. Things happen to us all and we don't know, do we? We've got family, we've got, you know, that anything could happen today to any one of us, couldn't it? And that's
absolutely
interesting.
And it's this element of suddenness. Things can happen just absolutely, you know, in a split second. That adversities that come to us, some of them you can see them building up, and yeah, you worry about it and you stress. But others can come to you and literally rip the rug out from underneath you, rip the carpet up from underneath you, and that's it. Your feet have gone, and you are laying on your back, and yeah, you've got a choice of whether you stay there or whether you get up.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to me back in 2012. You know, for when I, of all the adversity that I went through, kind of with divorce and financial hardship and sacrificing stuff and having to start again and debt around my neck and blah, blah, blah. You know, you think that that's enough. But no, 2012 had other ideas for me, mate. And again, it's this element of suddenness. April the 15th, 2012, at 1:30 in the morning, I received a phone call from my sister saying to me, "James, you've got to get in your car and you've got to drive down to Brighton now. Connor, my nephew, has been attacked and he's in hospital." And I thought to myself, right, okay, he's busted up bad because he's in hospital, but he'll be okay because he's in hospital. You know, he's going to be looked after.
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to me, my sister had to make that phone call serious enough for me to get in my car and drive down, but she had to hold stuff back from me so her baby brother would arrive safely 4 hours later and not drive like a lunatic.
Yeah, I get that.
That she had been given news that Connor would 99% not make it. He wouldn't make it. So unbeknownst to me, I was making that journey to Brighton full of nerves and trepidation that yes, it's bad.
But hope, a bit of
hope. But hope, absolutely. Yeah. That he's fine. He's going to have a big bump on his head, and that he's going to be busted up. He's going to have a broken jaw, or, you know. But yeah, I didn't know I was going down there to say my final goodbye to my nephew, because he had been hit with what's called a coward's punch. It's an unprovoked attack where the recipient is either hit from behind or from the side.
Right.
And they don't see the punch coming. Their feet are literally stuck to the floor, but they fall like a tree being cut down, and their head is the last thing to make contact with the floor, and their head hits the ground, and they die of severe brain damage, which is called blunt force trauma. You know, my nephew's brain stem was severed, was ruptured and damaged, and when that happens, neurosurgeons say that when your brain stem is damaged in any shape, way or form, if you survive, you will still live the rest of your life in a vegetated state. You won't be able to talk, you won't be able to walk, you won't be able to eat, you won't be able to drink, you won't be able to communicate. But at most, you'll be able to blink your eyes. And they say that death is the best option.
Yeah, it's not. That's an awful thing to say, but I can, if it was me personally in that position, I'd say, yeah, I'd hope it, you know, end, because I wouldn't.
That's no quality of life.
No, it's not.
It's no quality. You haven't got any dignity. It's But, you know, it's one of them that, what a choice to make. You know, as human beings, we're not designed to make that choice.
No.
But it is brought to your door through the actions of others. And again, it's all about kind of how you act is important, but how you react is the most important thing in life.
Yeah.
And again, it knocked us down, and myself and my family had to make that decision, had to make that choice of whether we stay there or whether we get up and try and make a most severe negative into the best positive that we can.
Yeah, make that life that was taken worth it, mean something and still remember it, because I know what you're doing, and obviously you're going to talk about that and what you've done with that and what you're doing to keep that alive is brilliant, I think. So, anyway, just, yeah.
And you do, it's that we often think about ourselves, Kirk, that we don't, look, we don't want to do this, we don't want to get up and carry on. Of course we don't, but you have to then think of your loved one. What your loved one would be saying, no, come on, listen, you're doing this for me. Make me proud. That you then realise that everything that you want doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
It's all about what they would want, what they would do. And it's always the hardest thing, because a situation like that really puts upon you many, many different tests and challenges. And we're not talking about just grief and loss and anguish. You can be a really mild-mannered person, but all of a sudden you're thinking about films where you've seen, where there's been scenes of like torture or someone kind of paying someone back or getting revenge. And you start thinking, right, if I could, I would love to get that person on that table and I'd gaffer tape him down and I would do this to him. And if you're not that sort of person, it's making you into a person that you don't want to be.
Yeah, yeah.
So the challenges come in so many different forms that you get eaten up with bitterness and hatred and anger. And you want revenge, and it's something that affects you on so many different levels. So you have to channel that anger and that hatred and that bitterness and that grief and that loss into you have to channel it in the right way and use it as motivation and fuel to actually make the best that you can, not just for yourself, because like I say, what you want isn't important anymore, but to really pay the ultimate respect to that person's life who was taken.
Yeah, and you do that, and I'm really interested in the stuff you do. So you did, you've obviously got, after that's gone, you've gone back to Swansea and you're doing your plastering and everything, but you decided, which I thought was really interesting, and the thing that got me when I've heard you speak was do something for people that can never pay you back, and that really got me.
Yeah,
really got me that. And yeah, you know, talk about that,
because people do stuff with an ulterior motive, not a malicious motive, but with the hope that if I do this for you, you will be able to benefit me in some way. But yeah, going back to turning a negative into a positive, when I came up to Swansea, where it was quite literally a case of doom and gloom everywhere, people losing their houses, banks going bust, people losing their jobs, people falling below the poverty line and stuff like that, that I thought to myself, well, as a plasterer, what can I do to benefit other people?
Yeah.
And I put an offer out. I rang up the local newspaper and I said, look, I don't want you to think I'm some sort of lunatic, but I want to put an offer out. And they said, well, what is it? I said, look, I've been through some tough times, and I, to excuse the pun as being a plasterer, but I want to spread a bit of positivity.
Yeah.
And they said, right, what's your offer? I said, well, I am going to plaster a room free of charge once a month for deserving families. Now, the point I want to get across is what you've got to remember is I was in the worst economical time in modern history. I was self-employed with no guarantee of work. I was 25 grand in debt. I had bills to pay. I had to hit the ground running. And yet I was still willing to give this time up and potentially a day's worth of money.
Yeah.
And I had, so what I did was I went to local builders merchants and I said, look, this is what I want to do for people. Would you be prepared to give me the materials?
Yeah.
And a couple of the builders merchants stepped up to the plate, and it was like, yeah, right, let's get this going. So, yeah, the newspaper article come out about this plasterer that was willing to plaster a room free of charge for deserving families. You can send a nomination to his website. blah, 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 a website that was built for nothing from a website company. So this is what I'm saying about all these people, that when you see others do good stuff, it's amazing that how all these other people who wouldn't necessarily have thought about doing it before are all of a sudden there saying, yeah, do you know what? Well, I'd like to help you. I'd like, you know, the website guy for nothing. Yeah. The builders merchants for nothing. Right. So I was getting in the nominations and, yeah, you know, they came in thick and fast, and it was quite literally a case of, you know, it wasn't people who were buying a house and needed it doing up. This was bedroom makeovers for youngsters with cancer, youngsters with cerebral palsy who are blind and autistic, youngsters with muscular atrophy who were wheelchair bound, young carers, bullied teenagers on the verge of suicide. We're talking victims of domestic violence, low-income families that didn't have a penny to rub together. And I've just thought to myself, if I can plaster a room, then they can at least, you know, it's in their capabilities to paint it, you know, because plastering is such a specialist kind of trade, you know, but anyone can get a roller in their hand, you know. I'm not dissing painters and decorators, but people will give it a go.
Of course you can. Of course you can. Yeah, there's a skill to being a painter, a proper painter, but yeah, anyone can paint.
Yeah, you know, they will pick up a roller and they will give it a go.
Yeah.
You know, the lines might be a bit jagged and all that, but the house, the walls, you know, the house itself, the room looks beautiful, you know, with a new splash of colour. So I thought to myself, you know, if I can give people a room where they're proud to be in, then they, a lot of positivity can start from there.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of the house might be in chaos, but if that one room that they can go to and feel proud to be in, then that's job done. But when we were doing it for, like I say, the youngsters with cancer and who were blind and autistic and muscular atrophy, you think to yourselves that these people, it really gives you a big element of gratitude. It gives you this attitude of gratitude. You're grateful for what you've got. And when I look at it, going back to the phrase that hit you, Kirk, that little boy, Bailey, who was 4 years old and who was blind and autistic, when we kitted out his garage as a sensory room, he'll never be able to pay me back.
No.
But what I did get was, one of the days when I was there, Bailey wasn't feeling too well, and he wouldn't settle. And for some reason, for some strange reason, he really reacted to my voice. And he came and sat up on my lap and he fell asleep on me for 2 hours.
Mm.
And that was payment for me, just for him to get some rest. And his mum was kind of saying, oh, you know, look, we can try and put him down. And I'm like, no, you leave him there. You know, the boys are going to crack on.
Yeah.
I'm actually
loving
life at the moment. Look, I'm here with Bailey in the warm.
Because ultimately, that's what you're doing it for. You're not doing it for, like you say, it's not you. Could be off going doing something else, couldn't you? But you're doing it. It's not about you. It's not about you. It's about this human being that needs you and needs something from you. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, awesome. And it's a thing that, you know, a plasterer doesn't necessarily see himself as a life changer, but anyone can do it. Mm. Everyone has got a particular skill or talent or product or service that can benefit other people.
Yeah.
It's just, are you prepared to use it for those people that will never, ever be able to pay you back?
I think it's stunning. I really do. I think because it has affected people. I mean, I'm looking at ways that I can do, and I try and help people anyway, but not to that level that you have. But I've seen other people that we know, Matt Wilkins.
Baby Ruby.
And I burst into tears when I saw that the other day, and I don't mind admitting it. I burst into tears.
I thought it was incredible, mate.
And the fact that he's, and people won't know, but there's a charity in the Midlands. This guy that we're talking about, Mark's got a blind business, roller blinds and shutters and stuff.
That's it.
Saw this lady had tried to help
the Olive
family.
Tree,
Olive Tree Foundation.
Yeah, that's it.
So she put a roller blind up, which had fell off. So Mark's seen this, been touched by what you said, and probably would have never done it before, and has gone and fitted it. Not for him. He's not done it for benefit for him.
No.
But he's done it, and I think, wow.
And he amazing? Put up a specialist black helpline for Ruby as well. Now, I'm no expert, but I saw the video of baby Ruby there, and I'm sure that she's suffering from something that is exactly the same as a little girl who's a part of my church suffers with. Her name's Lydia. And they suffer from hydrocephalus, which is kind of a water on
the
brain.
Yeah, you can see the swelling.
And I'm sure baby Ruby suffers from that. So the black helpline will benefit baby Ruby like you would not believe. And that there is an example of someone hearing something, but not just hearing it, actually listening to it, but then going and applying it. Because so many people would hear the story, feel all pumped up and positive. Yeah, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. 2 days later, they totally forget about it. But it's obviously stayed with Mark. And that's the difference. That's, that, you know, you've got the people that, you know, the sayers, the hearers, and then the doers.
Mm.
Mark Wilkins is a doer. But I also know other people, from what I've said, who are business coaches, who are now setting up their own free seminars for unemployed adults to give a free seminar, free classes for people to maybe start up their own business. You know, Mark is another case. So yeah, that's again, that's payment for me, that people have been touched by the power of words, that I've brought my history and my life experience that now through just by speaking has now benefited baby Ruby. And everyone can do that.
Yeah.
Everyone. And that's my legacy. That's me leaving my mark. That's me, you know, saying to the world, yeah, that I was here. If I was taken tomorrow, there would be no question that Jamie Daniel was here.
There'd be no illusion, will there?
No.
You know.
And I don't want that to sound arrogant or conceited.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
But it's for the benefit of other people, mate.
The question is why, you know, everyone asks the question, why? What's it? Why are we here? Why are we here? What am I here for? And I think it is important. I believe that everyone's got a value to give. Everyone's got something to contribute. And very people should contribute. And if more people did what the stuff that you're doing and other people are doing, the world would be a much better place. Let's start looking at generating, producing good things, not looking at all the negative things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because if people fixate on the negative, and, you know, you could have fixated on your negativity, but you've not. You've turned it into something else, because you do a lot of public speaking now as well, don't you, Jim?
Yeah, very much so. This is my kind of mission and my purpose that I'm doing now. And I literally found out, I'm finding out the true power of words, that if you say them in a positive way or in a negative way, how it can have a detrimental effect or a benefiting effect on people's lives. And kind of what I'm doing now by using Connor's death, not by structuring and creating my One Punch Can Kill workshop, which I take into schools and colleges and universities, youth offender institutes, prisons and gypsy traveller sites. That's one element of my talks, but what I've also taken from Connor as a gift is the principles that I've learned through that entire process of what myself and my family have gone through and turned it into a motivational tool.
Yeah.
So when I speak, it's you can have no doubt that what I'm saying isn't true. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that what I'm saying comes from my heart, because I do believe that there's so many people out there, especially with speaking, that says stuff that people want to hear.
Yeah.
Not necessarily what they need to know. And I would rather be hated for telling the truth as opposed to being loved for telling a lie. But from what I've learned from Connor, one of the first real kind of impacting emails that I received was from a young boy called Nick. He was 14 years old, and I was doing a talk at the Waterfront Museum in Swansea, and it was the whole of Year 11 that was there as a motivational day for the upcoming exams, Year 11. And they were split up into three groups, and what they were doing were kind of being, they would alternate around my talk, a physical activity class, and an educational class, and they would rotate around. And he sent me an email saying, I was in your third class. Oh, your third talk of the day. I was in your third group. You may not have seen me, but if you did, I was the one at the back, sitting to the left. If you had noticed me, you would have noticed that I was severely shaking due to my social anxiety and general anxiety disorder. Now, this is a 14-year-old boy we're talking about. He said, but what you've said to me today has inspired me to become what it is that I want to become, and that is a history and a French teacher. And that blew me away. Mm. But what come next was the deal sealer for me, was when he said, you haven't just changed my life. He said, you've saved my life. He said, because tonight I was planning on committing suicide.
Gee whiz.
And that's a 14-year-old boy.
That's terrible. It's terrible, and it's great because you were there and you've done that. So you don't know how many times that's happened to you. You don't know how many people you've affected. And it must be quite a lot, Jamie, quite a lot from what you've done. So, yeah, it's just bonkers. So we're getting close to the end of the show.
To the limit.
It just goes so fast.
Yeah, big
so,
time, mate.
A couple of things. Yeah. What have you got planned, and where can people get hold of you? Because I think that's important.
Well, basically, what I've got planned is just pretty much the same, just going into all these different arenas that, like I say, because the message is so truthful and it can be applied to so many different arenas, is why I'm speaking at schools, colleges, universities, prisons, young offender institutes, gypsy traveller sites. I'm speaking at business exhibitions. I'm speaking to sports teams, athletes. I'm speaking to boxers, MMA fighters. I'm speaking, sports teams, you know, rugby. You know, to get motivated, and it's all coming from a real place of truth. Yeah. You know, from where I'm saying it, so it's why it's impacting. So pretty much are the same, but yeah, my social media details is on Twitter, on Instagram, and on YouTube, and on LinkedIn is at Grief Preacher. Now, that was a name that was given to me inside Park Prison, presented by one of the inmates. So it's kind of stuck, but it's at Grief Preacher, all one word. My website is www.connorshelpinghand.com. And just kind of keep up to date with what I'm doing. But it's a journey that I'm on, and I can't wait to see where it takes me.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for being on the show. Really
bless
appreciate
you, mate.
It.
No, I really appreciate it. Thank you, Kirk.
Thank you. Well, Jamie, thanks very much for being on the show. I know you've got big plans for 2017, and keep on it. Keep on it, mate. Well, I hope you enjoyed that, people. Thanks. Thanks again for listening. Hey, next week, we're going to talk about geocaching. And if you're listening to us on the podcast, please subscribe. You can catch me every Tuesday evening on Radio Warwickshire between 6:30 and 7:30. And check me out on Facebook, Kurt Pixton on Facebook, or why not go to Twitter at Dougie Stone. Follow me on there, let's interact. Let's make 2017 a great year. Thanks for listening, people.